in. Like, my wife's not like a crypto person, so she doesn't like, she's not been in the space like, you know, I have, and so she's still kind of learning. And like, so she hasn't figured out that, like, in a bear market, you gotta, like, you gotta rip, you know, you gotta pull it in a bit. You know what I mean? You gotta, like,
every $2 crypto token spent is like $20 in the future.
Exactly. You don't want to burn that capital.
Bag of chips, you must be high.
I don't want barbecue chips that much that I'm gonna spend $20 on them or whatever, right? Like,
exactly.
Oh, Chad Barriford, the bear market blues. We could barely afford anything here at the Crypto 101 podcast. We hope everybody's having an awesome start to their day. We decided to do a little cold open here. Got the energy moving in the backstage. Decided to just get things going. Chad, thank you for joining us here at the Crypto 101 podcast. How are you doing? You are sweating your hiney off in a small little WeWork phone booth, it looks like.
Yeah, I had to jump into WeWork for this evening, but yeah, it's hot and there's a fan, but the fan doesn't actually do anything. It's just there for it's just there WeWork. For show. It's just there for show to make sure it all looks cool.
It looks like there's a small sun right outside your outside your door.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could, like,
a small nuclear reactor.
I don't know. Is this better? Is this worse? I don't know. You guys tell me. Yours are the
That's better, actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Loving it.
Okay.
So, Chad, tell us about your journey here in crypto. How'd you end up becoming a key member of the Thor Chain ecosystem? Because this is a big coin. This is like a top 50.
Yeah. For sure. It's been a long time coming and it's been a lot of work to get here. But, for me, like, I started, many years ago in 2017, or it feels like many years ago at least, I decided just basically, I've never seen the world. I decided to travel the world. And so I sold most of the things that I owned and just, you know, put the rest in some small storage thing and then just put on a backpack and just started go around the world. And one of the very first places I went to was Croatia. And I met these two guys there, all the fellow backpackers. And they were just talking to me about Ethereum and Bitcoin and these kind of things. And I'm just like, And as a software engineer, I was already kind of fascinated about the mechanisms and how it actually worked. And so I ended up I went to Lisbon for a while and I was just like, ate and slept and didn't really leave my apartment much. And I started just like building a blockchain from scratch, right? As an academic sandbox to understand the mechanisms at play. Casually build a blockchain. Because, like, it's a good way to learn. Like, if you want to learn how a car works, like, you know, just go ahead and just
build a car.
Like, you'll learn a lot.
I just watch YouTube videos. I guess others are more curious than I am.
I mean, I love YouTube videos too. Don't get me wrong at all. But just like, if I want to learn actually understand the mechanics at play, and I built this silly, stupid blockchain that's useless. That it was proof of work at the beginning, and then I changed to proof of authority.
Not Thor Chain.
No, it was just like an academic kind of sandbox.
Proof of concept,
just to play around and just like test ideas and different consensus mechanisms, and just like, oh, I'll try this and I'll try that and I'll break this.
You weren't like selling tokens to the public. No, nothing like this.
I mean, it's open. It's actually on my GitHub if anybody wants to check it out or whatever. I mean, it's shit code, to be honest with you. It's a playground, right? It was just a fuck around and try different ideas. And it's a piece of shit, to be honest with you. But like
a Word document.
It was. That's not very good. Quality code, but it was just meant just to experiment and try and just like understand the mechanism of play and like actually implement it myself just to help me fully understand the logic, right? And so once I did that, I became like, wow, this is huge. Like this changes structurally so many things of society in such significant ways. And I'm lucky enough that I found it like what I could hope to think is somewhat early enough. 2017 is not that early, but early enough, I suppose. And like, there's so much like just missing infrastructure and missing like just, it's like a little tiny baby infant, you know, a little thing that hasn't even matured yet. And I was lucky enough to use whatever brain juices I have and skill sets I have to just dedicate myself as an entrepreneur that's been building things for like a long period of time and just kind of thinking of ideas and just building shit out and just having fun while doing it. I just thought that my skill set could be quite useful here, and maybe I could build something of real value, of real importance, or really, you know, something that can contribute to the industry. And Thor Chain ended up being that thing.
Wow! And so Thor Chain. So when this whole thing started, who was there? Like, who was with you starting Thor Chain in the trenches?
Yeah. So the earliest versions of Thor Chain was actually in 2018. Right. And there was a small group of people, I think like just like two or three kind of like co-founders, if you want to call them that. And they kind of hired an external team of devs to try to build this thing out. And it really didn't work out so well. I mean, some of the, like Threshold Signature didn't exist yet. Cosmos didn't really quite exist yet. Like, it really didn't have the technological or cryptographic maturity required to build this kind of, you can't just like build this thing in a smart contract. Like, that just fundamentally would never work. And so like, it didn't really quite work out so well. And so the idea was just kind of like canceled, you know, all right, move on, like whatever. And so in 2019, the following year, I met one of those early stage co-founders, and he was actually interviewing me for a job as like a CTO of a new crypto project. And he was just like, hey, I had this, like, we have to build this thing together at a hackathon in Germany. And he's just like, hey, like, this is basically your job interview. Let's like work together for a couple of days. And then we'll figure out if you're a good fit for this, you know, CTO role. And then like, what are we going to build? I'm like, I don't know. Well, what should we build? And he was just like, well, I had this idea like last year that was really like, pretty cool. And like this idea of like, you know, cross-chain swaps. Like, we would just start like hacking a bit on this thing. I'm like, yeah, sure. That sounds like a great idea. Let's start working on that thing. And so then like within 2 days, we had like a very early, not fully functional yet, but like early kind of the code and the basic logic kind of more or less working at that point. And then from there, we just started like, this could actually work. We've had threshold signatures. We got, you know, Cosmos SDK. We got all the components we need. We have the technical skill sets to do so. And then, you know, Bob's your uncle.
And was there like an economic mind that was driving the tokenomics, or were you guys all just like computer scientists and just, you know, coding away? And then all of a sudden you realize like, oh my God, we need tokenomics. And then you just slapped it on like a bumper sticker.
No, actually, the tokenomics, at least some of the tokenomics, was already kind of figured out and ironed out long before I joined the project in 2019. And so like things like the slip-based fee model, well, I think we're the only ones to actually use this design. It's actually highly innovative, right? It's actually very, very highly effective, both in stemming volatility, right? I mean, price manipulation. It's also very good at producing high quantity of fees, but low fees, but a high quantity of yield for LPs. And it also makes it like mathematically impossible to do MEV attacks, like sandwich tax, for example. Like we had solved MEV like fucking 2-3 years ago. Everybody's still arguing about it today, like idiots. But like the problem's been solved from ThorChain's perspective. It's not even practical or possible, in part because of the economics. But there was more economics to be created about like Asgard vaults and Yggdrasil vaults and like other things that came into play about economic security, blah blah blah, all these things. But like it was a lot of the math was kind of already ironed out, you know, at the time that I joined. Well, at least some of the math, I should say.
Interesting. What was the inspiration for the name ThorChain? What's the story of the drunken night that you guys decided this is it?
So the name already existed at the time that I got involved. The name came from because one of the guys, early guys, were just fans of Norse mythology, right? And so he actually has built a few different projects, and some of those projects actually have Norse mythology naming to them. It's actually some of the biggest like coins this person has been involved with. And like not some of the like the Bitcoins, not big as a Bitcoin, but just like alt in general. And so that was just like a fan of Norse mythology, and we just kind of latched onto that idea, and it became like a very useful name just because of the memeability of it, like having all these like Chris Helmsworth, you know, animated GIFs or whatever, memes, whatever, of him like hitting us, you know, hammer out and killing a bunch of, you know, creatures or whatever. Like actually made it very memeable, which actually was very useful in terms of like getting the grassroots to grow and get the name out there.
No, I love the name. There's nothing like it. And you guys have such a strong community. And you guys got the little Rooney tokens, which,
yeah.
You know, people like, I don't know. It's fun when they have it. Like Tezos has Tezzies.
Yeah.
It's just fun to say.
We got Roonies.
On a completely separate note and thought process that just hit me as you're talking about your GitHub, you're like, hey, check shit out. It's open source. The whole world could kind of see it and use technology, right? ThorChain is completely open source. Anybody could run an instance of it. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
100%.
So hypothetically speaking, you wake up one day, you roll over, you're scrolling through Twitter and you read a headline that says North Korea found using ThorChain,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Yep.
And you know, it's open source technology. Anybody could use it. bad people take agnostic technology to bad ends.
Yep.
As a founder of a technology like this, how do you think about this? What happened? Like,
yeah,
you know,
so
what, do you have to shut it down or
no.
Can you shut it down?
No. Hell no. Well, I mean, first of all, I couldn't shut it down. Even if I wanted to shut it down, I literally would not have the ability to do so. But my personal view is that, and I think a lot of people agree with me on this view, is that the network should be amoral, right? It should be without morality. It shouldn't view this swap or that swap as a good swap or a bad swap or whatever. That creates so many problems. I mean,
a lot of subjectivity.
Governance issues, like blah, 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 all these things. A public good network in general, whether it be Bitcoin or whatever, should be just something that exists in the world only to serve humanity and has no preferential treatment over character A versus
like a piece
character
of nature.
Piece of nature. Like, you know, like if you eat an
it's like a volcano, it could be good, but it could be bad.
Yeah. If you eat an apple, the apple doesn't care if you're a terrorist or not, right? nor would we ask the apple, like, don't give nutrition to the terrorist, only to, like, my friends or whatever it be. That would be rather silly and stupid, right? And to me, like, crypto or public good networks in general should have the same mentality. If you want to put morality on it, as humanity does, as it's not a thing that exists within computers, it's a thing that only exists within the consciousness of humanity. Like, it doesn't exist actually in nature. It doesn't exist in computers. It only exists within the subjectivity of, like, the psychology or the consciousness of humanity. If you want to do that after the fact, and you want to, like, say, okay, we're going to use Thorchain for swaps, but we don't like Dogecoin because Dogecoin's this, or we don't like Xcoin, or whether not to pick on Doge or anything, but, like, then don't put it in your UI. And if you want to do that, then fine. Have fun, whatever, right? But like the code, the protocol itself should be just completely agnostic to these things. It shouldn't care about what I call the meat space, like the meta space, like the metaverse and the meat space. Like, it shouldn't care about what people think within, like, these kind of things. It should just operate in the best interest of the network and its participants.
And do you think that's genuinely the way that the world will be progressing? Do you think that that's a future that's inevitable? Because those open ideas and, you know, we're a crypto podcast. We obviously believe that. But there's lots of resistance, i.e. governments and borders and all this kind of stuff. Who likes to stem the flow of open permissionlessness and all that kind of thing?
So that's
do you
true.
Feel like you butt up against a lot of resistance?
I mean, obviously, we don't know for certain, but contrary to, I think, what other people might think, or common mentality, is I am actually pretty bullish on the idea that, like, regulation won't be as big of a thing as people think it may be on DeFi or whatever. Just because if you look at the history, that, for example, in the 1990s, there was this what they call crypto wars. Right, because and during World War II, it was determined that cryptography was a municipality. It was a weapon of sorts, and so it needs to be protected, and it couldn't be. It had to be regulated. Blah, 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 all these things like that, right? And it wasn't until 1990 did somebody create this guy named I think I can't remember his last name right now, blanking on it. But he created GPG, which is pretty good protection. And that was like the first time that you were able to, like, encrypt something with a very, like, ease of use, which from the government's perspective, like, oh, this becomes a tool for terrorists, right? And it became this big giant, like, war that actually, like, literally happened politically speaking within the United States of America. You had these kind of not anarchists, but these crypto kind of, like, punk people who were just like, no, information should be free. I should be able to have privacy if I want to and be able to encrypt my files if I want to or whatever. And they started doing all this crazy thing about, like, printing the code into actual books, like physical books, because it's now part of free speech because it's, like, in a literal fucking book. And then it became this huge battle between the governments wanting to have backdoor keys, like, into all the encryption, like, technologies. It, like, people at MIT who were inventing, like, RSA, for example, were being threatened by the NSA and the CIA about, like, if you release this, it'll be considered to be, like, a threat to United States' best interests and blah, 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 all these kind of bullshit. And so, like, there was this entire process. But then eventually the United States of America just said, okay, we're not going to, like, you know, limit encryption, right? Because it became, and by not doing that and not limiting encryption, it created entire economic systems like what we call internet commerce, for example, the ability to log into a web page because you can now have the ability to do so, to be able to SSH or connect to a server using RSA encryption, right? Became like readily available for everybody, which empowered massive quantities of like corporations, economic systems and economies to do wonderful and amazing things with which we now consider to be the internet, right? And then within the internet, we even have things like email protocol. Like, you know, email protocol is as an open standard. It's not regulated, right? It's not like, doesn't force everybody to do KYC who's providing an email service. Like, that's not done at all. So there's so many examples within like our real world where, you know, cryptography and cyberpunks, if you want to call them that, win out. Right. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen here. How could I reasonably say that? But I'm just more bullish on it. I mean, the ability for government to like shut down smart contracts and protocols and DeFi protocols and this kind of stuff is getting increasingly difficult, especially as commerce is becoming more aligned. Like as like more companies like Tesla and Square and whatever start holding Bitcoin and interacting with these DeFi protocols, like that just creates more like political pressure on governments to like not get in the fucking way and create massive problems and hinder innovation, hinder experimentation.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And if they were, it's just going to make a more dangerous environment because people are going to want to, they're going to do what they want to do anyway.
Yeah.
Which has been proven across many, many different industries. Prohibition of crypto would not work.
Right. And not to mention that, like, just because something is regulated, right, doesn't mean that's like it becomes safe for everybody to use. Like, FTX was a regulated exchange. What the fuck happened there? Right. Like, versus something like ThorChain, which is completely solvent and it's provably solvent in any given moment. Anybody in the world can like just look at the wallets and look at the balances. And like, that's just, you don't need to regulate that because it's already in a sense like self-regulating just by proving that it does what it does. And anybody can honor
as true as it comes.
As true as it comes. You only need actually regulation for like humanity because humans are the dangerous element here. Humans doing like, St. Mick and Freed, SBF, like all the shit that he and Alameda did together. Like, you need to regulate that shit because of the corrupt motherfuckers who are just like taking people's money from them, which that, you know, probably should be regulated. Like, regulating humans is probably an important thing to do. But DeFi, there's no humanity. There's no human risk to these systems. It's only a protocol risk. And so, and what these things do and how they act and how they perform, and it's just publicly open. There's no secrecy here. There's no hidden, you know, buttons or whatever or something like this. Like, everything's transparent.
You got to admit, it is a little esoteric to be able to figure out, like, you know, like for me, I'm not completely savvy with how to code. If I were to go look at and check the solvency of ThorChain, it would take me a lot of ninja super work to be able to get that.
But for example, like you and I probably both believe that the Earth is round, right? That's a common we both believe. But how do you and I know that it's round? right? Like, you know, have we actually gone
take a lot of people's word for it, right?
Yeah, like we rely on scientists to provide facts and information and to develop a consensus of if the earth is flat or round, for example, right? And so the same thing happens with Bitcoin, like taking Bitcoin as an example, like it has over 800 Bitcoin core developers have contributed to that code base. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions, who knows, people who have actually looked, read, audited. And so because it's been done so many times by very smart devs, that we can build a confidence on it. Because if there was some sort of massive like backdoor that Satoshi could just mint himself like 10 million Bitcoin in a given moment, like,
somebody would have caught on.
Somebody would have caught on by that, and that would have been, you know, proven to the world, and we would have known it. But obviously, Satoshi doesn't have that ability to do so, and just because he's proven that he doesn't have the ability to do so by showing the code to hundreds of thousands of people around the world, right? So, like, it's not like you don't have to be a dev to trust it. In some senses, because the community as a whole will validate that it's real.
Yeah, no, that's a really good explanation. But kind of backtracking a little bit into how protocols have technical risk, or I think you said protocol risk, right? Yeah. It's built into, you know, all of these networks, and we've seen a litany of hacks, right? Yeah. This year across particularly bridges.
Correct.
And maybe even, you know, direct competitors to ThorChain. Could you tell us a little bit about how you have navigated the choppy waters of running or of operating this kind of bridge network while a lot of competitors were laying to waste?
Yes, there's many attributes to this conversation. It's actually a really fascinating topic. I think really from my perspective, the reason why bridges specifically in the last like year or so have been like exploited so many times is because they have huge amount of risk to that. They have both the risk of CeFi and the risk of DeFi like combined together, right? Because a lot of these bridges are just like a few guys running it together, you know, in their like on an AWS cluster or something like this, and like that's how it's run. So you have the CeFi risk of those individuals who have control over the keys to steal. Like there was, I want to say it was Wormhole, but maybe it was a different one. But
the Ronin Bridge
is a good example of that, right? Like the guy downloaded a PDF of whether it was malicious that was going to give him a job offer or something like this. And then like most of the keys were like taken from his laptop, whatever it was. And then all of a sudden all the funds were gone. Like that's what we call CeFi risk, right? There's like a humans have access to all the funds and it can be very malicious if they chose to be, or just download a malicious
accident, even.
Or just download a malicious PDF by accident. And like all the funds are gone. In addition to that, you still have code being executed, right? You still have code of like the protocol risk of maybe there's some sort of bug or exploit. And we've seen that in the bridges as well. And so most bridges have this, both the CeFi risk and the DeFi risk concatenating together to create a much higher risk, also having massive honeypots of like $600 million worth of various assets in the Ronin Bridge or the Wormhole Bridge or like what have you. In ThorChain's case, it's very different though. There's no CeFi risk. There's DeFi risk. There's protocol risk. Absolutely. And in the very early days of the beta of ThorChain, we had our own DeFi related exploits that had happened, which of course we patched and fixed and like and carried on, right? And in those days,
in that case, just to backtrack real quick on that point, do you guys fork the code and like delete the hacked coins, or how does that kind of work?
No, we didn't do anything like that. The treasury just, we have a treasury that was worth some money at the time, and we basically put the money back in. Like we as a dev team, we have access to
our,
yeah, we basically just like, you know, X number of dollars was stolen from the pools, and we just said, all right, well, there's a bug. We fixed the bug, and then we put the X dollars back in just from our own treasury. So that the users didn't actually experience any actual losses, which is what the treasury was designed to be anyway, right? That's why we limited it in the early days of that beta. We limited the amount of capital that we allowed into the network. We didn't want to have like $1 billion on day one. That would be completely like ridiculous and
like a lot of the Alameda farms.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to expose yourself to protocol risk with high quantities of volume in the early days of a project. That's just, that's being what I consider that to be irresponsible, because the protocol risk is the most high in the earliest days of the execution of that protocol. That's why ThorChain was exploited in the earliest days, because that's when the protocol risk is the most high. And then over time, you're making code changes and bug fixing and solidifying things and all this kind of stuff. And over time, you have more and more confidence that the code is good, hard, secure, all those things. And so we expected that, which is why we capped the liquidity of the network, so that when funds were stolen, it wasn't a $600 million, you know, in the wormhole or Ronin tech. It was just like, I think like 10 or 15, whatever the hell the number was. I can't remember the top of my head. And so we had the capital to do so, and we just like paid back the users and then like fixed the bugs and carried on. And then since then, we've created a series of really significant like security implications to the protocol to make it hyper, hyper secure.
What do you think the grand vision is for, you know, security in DeFi? Is it running transactions through something like the Shintu network that was built by Certik, or is there going to be maybe like RPC nodes that automatically have, you know, certain filters in them, like antiviruses do in computers now? Like, what's the next evolution of DeFi security in your mind?
I think where we go wrong in general in DeFi is that DeFi projects in the early days should be have a layer of control on top of them, right? To be able to pause trading, for example, right? If there's some sort of exploit that, you know, an LP can add liquidity and then remove more than they added, like, you need to be able to pause that so that you can fix the bug, you know, deploy it, and then carry on in the early days. Right. Eventually, you don't need that anymore, and you can just like delete it and whatever. I think that's one thing that very few DeFi protocols don't do that they should do, especially in the early days when you want to protect people's valued assets. Right. That's the first thing. The second thing I think we do wrong as a community is that we rely on audits. Audits are not as effective as people think that they are. Right. If you go to like, you know, Rekt, you know, news, whatever. And you see all the people that like that got all the contracts that got wrecked or whatever, like a majority of them, a vast majority of them, have been audited by several teams, right? And in my own personal experience of working with auditors, like they don't do it like a really good deep dive, in my opinion. They don't go into the depths. They just kind of like check it out and then like move it on, and they really don't do an effective job of actually auditing. So I think the better way of going at it that I would love to see more DeFi projects do is, as we did, we decided to create our own security team, right? And this is what they do in CeFi all the time. Like, if you go to Coinbase, for example, they have red teams, blue teams, like, and they have like 100 fucking engineers that just like are constantly just making sure everything's like locked the fuck down, right? We don't really do that in
great
DeFi.
Great visual.
Yeah. We don't really do that in the DeFi space in general, which is a bit sad. And I think that's one of the lessons that I personally learned when we got in our early days of our beta got exploited. And so we created a dedicated security team that audits the code like continuously. Like, we don't merge a single line of code unless it's been audited by the dev team and been audited by the ThorSec security dedicated team that does that. In addition, they also like run the bug bounty, and they also do like constant like probing of different aspects and concepts and trying to secure like the supply chain, like all the stuff, and I'm so glad we built that team. They've been doing actually a really great job. I wish more teams would do that, but we just focus so much on devs, we don't focus that much on security.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it's good that you guys are kind of sticking out like a sore thumb amidst a lot of the bridges, because you do have that dedicated security team. You guys have been very robust in terms of security. So one of the things I wanted to pick your brain on while we still had you, you guys, ThorChain, the Rune token, this is one of the largest cross-chain liquidity networks in crypto. So you got a pretty unique vantage point. So I'd like to know what you see right now with all the liquidity issues that are going on that are both crypto specific as well as macro. Like, we've seen a number of market makers just blown the fuck out in the past like 6 months. And we've also seen, you know, just generally rates, US dollar rates rise. So there's a big hoarding of USD. What's your vantage point here?
Yeah, I mean, bear markets in general, they do kind of ravish liquidity just by tendency. And then if you just to make that even worse, we have this like contagion, this massive contagion effect of like Terra collapsing, which contributed to FTX collapsing, which caused FTX to this BlockFi to collapse, which caused Voyager, and caused this contagion effect is significant, which obviously also has an effect on liquidity of crypto in a larger macro sense. So that's just the nature of the beast, right? That's how this shit fucking works. There's nothing that I can do about it, nothing that you can really do about it, other than just like ride the waves, like HODL and all that kind of shit. For us, like what we think about in terms of like liquidity is that our own TVL has been hit significantly from the bear market, the same as any other AMM, Uni, Sushi, you know, you name it, right? For us, what we want to do to kind of help kind of counter that is we've recently launched what we call a savers feature, right? Which is basically like an earn product or an interest account, similar to like what you might get on BlockFi, where you just put in a single asset, let's just call it Bitcoin, and you earn more Bitcoin. Like layer one Bitcoin, there's no rap, bullshit, fucking whatever. Literally real Bitcoin on real Bitcoin earning. And by doing so, you provided a service that, you know, is hugely in demand, right? Like think about this, like as an AMM, you provide two different assets. And in Thorchin's case, it's Rune and Bitcoin, for example. And LPs are like in a Venn diagram. They're like that little sliver in the middle. People who want to get Rune and want to get Bitcoin, that sliver in the middle, which is not a very big sliver. But by opening up to just like the Bitcoin people, which is this massive, like this thing is the size of a semi truck, right? Like in this kind of Venn diagram world, because Bitcoin's obviously super massive. It's the elephant in the room, obviously. And so by giving this group of people, like saying who love Bitcoin and want to stack their sats and all that kind of stuff and saying, hey, you can throw your Bitcoin into this network, not be exposed to the Rune asset. You don't care if the Rune price goes up or down or left or right or whatever. You just earn sats from your sats. You have no impermanent loss whatsoever, right? And you just stack your sats. You don't have to do much. And you're earning, right now, it's like
a variable rate.
It is variable rate. Right now, it's about like 4 or 5%, somewhere like in between, right? Like that. If it's a hugely popular service and lots of people like, you know, YOLO into this kind of system, then the interest rate would obviously drop. So it's not like a fixed rate like we saw at Terra, you know, which is unsustainable.
20%
fixed rate. that would be completely unsustainable and problematic in many respects.
Given that Bitcoin isn't a staking protocol, though, where's the new Bitcoin created from for this year?
I minted it out of my back pocket. I have a Bitcoin machine in my back pocket that's mints. No,
he's Satoshi.
I'm Satoshi, guys. No, of course not. No, so the network has Bitcoin pool where you can use to trade your Bitcoin for Ethereum or Bitcoin for USDC or
Doge. Smart contract.
Yeah, sort of. It's not actually a smart contract, but just it's a liquidity pool, right? Where people can actually put in Bitcoin and get out Rune, put in Bitcoin, get out Ethereum, put in Ethereum, get out Bitcoin, whatever. And by doing so, they're paying trading fees. And so some of these trading fees go to, you know, you as a provider of savers, for example, or being an LP of the pool. And that's how yield is generated. It's not fake yield where just like coins are just minted out of fucking nowhere forever and blah, 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 all these kind of things. It's actually real yield. It's actually people are paying fees to use your service because you're providing something of value that other people are willing to pay for. I mean, imagine this kind of idea. Crazy, right? And from that, actually, crypto, it's just like staking in general in crypto, just like, we'll just mint more coins for the purpose of minting more coins. And no one's paying for that. Nobody wants that. Nobody would pay me to stake my Cardano ADA into Cardano. Like, nobody gives a shit whether or not I stake my ADA. Who the fuck's paying for it? Well, I'm just printing coins out of fucking nowhere. This whole idea is just ludicrous and fundamentally stupid, if you ask me. But no, in Thorchain's case, we actually provide a valuable service, being able to move your value from Bitcoin to Ethereum or whatever you want to do, and you're willing to pay money for it. And by doing so, you're generating the Bitcoin that people are getting for providing Bitcoin into the network. Simple as that.
And then tell us about the genesis of the Rune coin and kind of like, is there an infinite supply of Rune tokens? Will they always kind of be inflating? And how did this whole thing, how do people earn the Rune tokens if it's not staking?
Yes. So we don't really do delegated stake issues normally see in the Cosmos world, just because it breaks economic security of the network, and obviously we don't want to do that. That would be bad. So the Rune token itself, it is a max cap. It's 500 million tokens. It will not go above that quantity. The yield that is generated by the nodes or by the LPs in the pools or the savers or whatever, that comes from partially the reserve, right, which is like a pool of 170 million rune out of that 500 million. So it's almost, you know, half or 40% or whatever the number is. And so that is used to kind of help kind of juice the yields of the early days. And then in addition to that, you also have the swaps that are happening that people are actually paying for. I mean, it's conceptually the same as Bitcoin. Like in the earliest days of Bitcoin, each block would emit 50 Bitcoin per block, right? And you had to do that. Like if you didn't do that and you said, okay, the miners are just getting the transaction fees, like Bitcoin would have failed. Right, like
yeah, nobody would have mined.
Because you'd spend a bunch of money mining, but then you'd earn like 0.00 cents, like whatever the hell the numbers, because like this nobody's transacting, and the fees are very cheap, and like no, it wouldn't be practical, right? So you had to juice the yield of a miner in the earliest days, and so it's like 50 Bitcoin and like very little fees are being collected, and then over time it goes to 25 and 12 and a half and 6.25, blah, blah, blah. And then during that time, the
halving.
Every 4 years are doing the halving. And then also the fees are also theoretically, they should be increasing, right? Theoretically, more people are using it. Bitcoin becomes more popular, more transactions, higher fees, blah, 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 blah. And so the idea of a long term is you start to bootstrap the network. You got to like mint some tokens, whatever. And then over like a 100-year time frame, Bitcoin is now like doesn't mint any more tokens, and the fees are now paying the miners their yield that they want to earn. And so Thorchain effectively is doing the same thing of like, it's not an infinite mint like other tokens are. It's same as Bitcoin. It's actually capped, but we have 170 million kind of put away, and it's emitting that into the, as block rewards to the people who are providing liquidity to the nodes, like all this kind of stuff. And the fees are very small in the very beginning days of the network. And then over time, we hope the same thing kind of happens where we have more integrations, and like Trust Wallet, for example, is integrating, which is going to generate a lot of fees. And that's nice. Just going to create that kind of like process, right? So as the network gets more adopted, more integrations, more wallets, more DEXs, more this, blah, 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 we get collect more in fees. The block rewards are going down over time, same as Bitcoin. And the fees are going up, same as Bitcoin. And in the end, we hopefully have a very sustainable network over hundreds and thousands of years.
You kind of answered my next penultimate question, my yep. second to last question.
All right.
Which was kind of like, you know, tell us about the future of Rune, the near future of Rune Chain in terms of partnerships and stuff. But like, you literally just answered it. Like, there's going to be more partnerships with wallets, like Trust Wallet, which is huge.
Yep.
Anything else that we should hit on before we kind of get to the closing questions?
Sure. No. There's no shortage of things happening in the community, and you know, we're building just as fast in the bear market as we were in the bull market. We have massive integrations happening. Like we do what we call DEX aggregation, so multiple DEXs can connect to each other using Thorchain as a corridor. So you can do like a trade from like Uni USDC on Uni. And then gets traded to Ethereum, and then Ethereum comes to Thorchain. Thorchain goes to like AVAX, we'll just call it AVAX, which then goes to Trader Joe or Penguin, which gets traded for like GMX token or something like this. Like all that's done in a single transaction, which is fucking ridiculous. So eventually every DEX has access to every other DEX's assets and liquidity. So every DEX has all assets, all chains, all like everything, the whole fucking
true utopia.
Yeah. And then it becomes very difficult for CeFi to like be able to compete with that, because it's only going to have a subset. And it's just, you know, if you don't know whether or not something's going to have your asset on it, you just go to the thing that always has basically all the assets, which is basically what this thing is going to do. That's massive. So we're seeing a lot of DEX aggregations happening, like Trader Joe and Pangolin, and more on the way in like that sense. I mentioned Trust Wallet, like Ledger's coming. Edge Wallet already did it. So much more, like a lot of wallets happening, some I can't even talk about. That's like the integration side, right? Then we also have the Savers thing, which I just mentioned, which is also a big thing. That just launched a couple weeks ago. People are welcome to check it out. Try it out. Like earn BTC in your BTC or AVAX or Atom or whatever. That's massive. And then the next thing after that, which is also super massive, is our lending design. It's like revolutionary, right? We're talking about a lending design that has 0% interest, no liquidations. You never get fucking liquidated. And there's no expiration on that loan. And so you have a lending design that actually is very, very low risk for the borrower. And they can actually use that thing to actually buy something in their lives, like a car or something like this, to improve the quality of their lives, rather than this like these degen style loans where you get liquidated because the Ethereum price went down, or like the interest rate just balloons, variable rate to like 20 or 30 or 40% or whatever the fuck the number is. That stuff is so risky and so impractical to use for like actual improving of people's lives that it's not really that useful, unfortunately. This lending design not only is a fucking cross-chain. Like, you can use layer one Bitcoin and AVAX and Doge and BNB and Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin, AVAX. Like, all these chains are supported, and these assets support. You can use any of these things as collateral for your loan. Like, that by itself is super massive. Like, that's insane. Like, we don't have decentralized loans of Bitcoin in a proper way today. Like, that doesn't exist, right? At least not in my opinion. It doesn't really exist. And, like, not only that, but this loan is 0% interest. You never get fucking liquidated, and you never have to, like, the expiration is whenever the fuck you want to pay.
Perpetual.
Perpetual. Perpetual is a good word to use.
But we don't get our degen fix.
But yeah,
Pizza Mind's palms are already sweating.
I mean, it won't be a. You could use
There's
it.
There's no chance I can lose. Why would I use it?
I mean, you can use it for degen purposes if you really want to. Honestly, it wouldn't be very useful in that sense, just because the loan, the LTV, the loan to value percentage will probably be very low on this lending protocol than it would be on MakerDAO or you know, insert Aave or Compound, whatever the thing is. So it's not as useful as in a degen sense, unless you want to like 3x long your position on Bitcoin, which you can't do that on any of those other protocols for obvious reasons. But like, it's really useful in the sense of like people who want to have their Bitcoin and invest in their Bitcoin or something like this, and be able to use that capital much more efficiently to actually like, oh, I've got like, you know, one BTC or some quantity of Bitcoin, whatever it might be, but I still want to be able to spend it and be able to like live my life and like not live like a hobo with like, you know, with one pair of underwear just because I'm just
look at my Bitcoin. I swear I can afford this coffee. Yeah. I know my car just got declined, but look at it.
I'm not spending a dime because everything's going to like my sats or whatever. You can actually like legitimately use the system to actually get a loan, keep your Bitcoin, keep your price exposure, all these kind of things, and then be able to live your life.
Jack, here's my request from ThorChain, is like a Visa card backed by this whole system. You know, you could deposit your Bitcoin into the ThorChain Visa card account. And
hey, somebody could do it. ThorChain wouldn't do that just because it's a Visa card, so it requires centralization, which is just not part of the intent or design of ThorChain. But if somebody, a centralized entity, let's just call them, you know, a TradFi company, right? If they wanted to do that, there's nothing stopping them. ThorChain's permissions.
I wonder if there's going to be a decentralized Visa card, or like, you know, like instead of Visa, MasterCard, Amex, it's like, I don't know, DAO.
That's crypto.
That's
right?
Exactly what AMP is building, actually. The AMP network is designed to do just that.
The cool. Flexi guys.
So, yeah. That's right, there. Well, cool. And there's a decentralized wallet that has a Visa card attached and ciphered. We're going to be talking with them pretty soon. And I think we'll have to say, hey, you guys need to integrate ThorChain.
I think actually Dash has a credit card, not a credit card, but like a debit card you can use. It's kind of interesting. I haven't really looked into the inner depths of it per se, but like, I think they have a system where that you can spend your Dash in a way that's, without being KYC'd or anything, this kind of thing.
Tripping. Well, I mean, man, that's why I love the space. There's always something around the corner. Always somebody doing something. Chad Barraford, thank you so much for coming on to the Crypto 101 podcast and spending about 40 minutes with us here. I really hope you come back on the show sometime soon. Maybe just to shit around. Maybe we'll talk about something constructive. I don't know. I love
Let's
your
shit around. I like to shit around. Man, shit around's fun as hell. Let's just do it. Fuck it.
Let's do it. All right, man. Well, stay safe out there, and we'll catch you around. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today.
Thanks for having me.
We got some more guests coming.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices?
And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.